We welcome in our Wednesday leadoff man. How are you, Mr. Schroeder? How are things going?
Things are good, Steve. How are you?
Great. Before we get into college football, one general question. Obviously, you had the opportunity to travel to Beijing 8 years ago to cover the Olympics. What's your level of interest or engagement in these particular games? We're day five now in Rio.
And that was one of the highlights of my career, I would say, covering the Olympics for the Register Guard in 2008. It's one of the many reasons I'm grateful to the Register Guard. And just always will remember my time there fondly. So you left that one wide open, and I walked right through that door. So, my level of engagement has not been great to this point in this Olympic Games. But once the track and field starts, I will get a little bit more tuned in. That to me, as much as anything else, is the Olympic Games. And I know a lot of people go, okay, yeah, but gymnastics. I get that. I mean, and certainly that's something that people really get fired up about. But to me, when the track starts is when it feels like the Olympics to me.
No, that makes sense. It's a staple. I mean, you think back to from Jesse Owens through the 30s all the way Wilma Rudolph, and that makes absolute sense. That podcast I gave a listen to, you guys talked about the preseason poll. And for many years, I'm going to draw a parallel here. The Yankees were always picked to be in contention because it seems like they were always in the mix. In college football now, that's Alabama, and they're number one. You talked about, in essence, what was your reasoning regarding kind of how much sense it makes to have Alabama one, and I think you actually said might not be illogical for the immediate future.
Yeah, well, I mean, as long as Nick Saban wants to keep going, and there's no indication from him that he's about ready to retire, even though he's about to turn 65. I always forget his actual age. But there's no indication that he's going to slow down anytime soon. I guess we could all expect it in the next 4 or 5 years. But as long as he's here and vital and doing the things he's doing, then I think we should expect that they're going to continue to recruit at the level at which they're recruiting, which allows them to have the success that they've had. I mean, look, a couple years ago, the program had clearly slipped a notch or two. They had not responded well to the arrival in the SEC of those fastball offenses, the kind of that Oregon had been playing in the Pac-12. Once those hit the SEC, Nick Saban's calling card, which is defense, struggled to handle it. And there was a thought that they might have come back to the Pac some, and I think they had. And they're not as far ahead as they were at the SEC West Pac or, frankly, the National Pac. But he has adjusted his recruiting in defensively, especially to where they've got more versatile, leaner, faster guys, especially along the defensive line. And he's basically learned as well as anybody has how to handle it. And they still have trouble with really good spread teams, but so does everybody else. And then offensively, they've adjusted to where they sort of will run that when it's necessary and when it fits them. And that was sort of anathema to him on both sides of the ball at one point. And so I actually think the adjustments he's made over the last couple of years are exactly the reason why you go, okay, when you couple the coaching adjustments that he's made with the talent they have on hand, it makes a ton of sense to always have them near the top of your heap every year.
By the way, good call. He turned 65 in October. So
there you go.
Right on the
money.
Well,
I thought I was right. I just was like, as I was saying, I was like, I'm probably going to get this one wrong.
Nah, trust yourself, George. Trust yourself. You wrote about this Crimson Tide team who had Blake Sims at quarterback 2 years ago, Jay Coker last year to win the title. What's the quarterback situation as it stands right now? And I don't know, maybe why does it seem to not matter because they're such an overwhelming top pick?
Yeah, I wrote a column that ran in conjunction with the release of the preseason coaches poll, which, of course, we sponsor,
right,
USA Today, or we coordinate. But that basically said, hey, they make as good a choice as sense as anybody at number one, despite the fact they're breaking in a new quarterback, just because we've seen what they've done the last 2 years, breaking in new quarterbacks and building offenses around them. But Blake Sims was one thing. Jake Coker was another thing. And frankly, Jake Coker, they benefited greatly from having a freak at running back. And not just that Derrick Henry had great ability, which he certainly did for the college game, and we'll see how he does in the pros, but he had durability, and you could such a big back, you could hand him the ball 40 times in a game, and they did, literally did, in a game. And so you were able to hide Jake Coker as he was needing to grow up, and he eventually grew into a quarterback by the end of the year that made plays. That said, now they've got to pick from among four, and obviously not all four are truly in the battle, but given the veil of secrecy that attends the Alabama practices, just like most other places around the country, it's hard to know exactly which. But Cooper Bateman is probably the favorite at this point as their starting camp. You know, he actually started a game last year, ironically the Ole Miss game that they lost, which became the game that Jake Coker probably won the job for sure in, because he came in and played fairly well, trying to lead them back late in the game. But Cooper Bateman and Blake Barnett are probably the two guys really battling it out. And then you've got David Cornwell, who's been around several years and is more of a prototypical, really big, strong, sort of pro-type quarterback. And they've got the intriguing guy is a true freshman who matriculated early and went through spring ball with them, and Jalen Hurts, who's a, you know, if you don't see him starting, and I don't think he will, you may see him in some wildcat packages that they might put together because he's just dynamic with the ball in his hands. But I think it's probably going to be Bateman winning the job. And then the question becomes, how well does he play? Because you don't have Derrick Henry to lean on. And by the way, you lost your number two rusher in Kenyon Drake, and you lost your center in Ryan Kelly, who's a huge loss. I mean, he was the anchor of that line, both physically in terms of being superior to the people across the line from him, and as important mentally. And so they're going to need probably better quarterback play to start off this year than they needed last year in order to win at the level they want to. And it only takes a mistake or two, you know, to be out of it, as you know, we've all seen. So, but having said all that, they've got so much talent on both sides of the ball, and defensively they should be so good that they ought to be able to ride out some, you know, some maybe rough patch and learning experiences from quarterbacks. And that's why we've got number one. That's a very, very long answer to your fairly short question.
Yeah, but good information.
Well, or something. It's a word salad.
In your conversation with Dan Youthman, you guys brought up an interesting subject. It seems like nobody likes this guy. Might be because of how things went with the Raiders, USC, Tennessee. But my goodness, do we need to take a moment to discuss the remarkable job that Lane Kiffin has done with that offense?
We do, and you're right. A lot of people, when you mention Lane Kiffin, just want to bring up, you know, the negatives about him, and there are plenty, and certainly from his head coaching career, many reasons to dislike him or how he went about things. What anybody who gets past that and pays attention to the football knows is that he's really good at offenses and X's and O's and things like that. Look, I would tell you that a lion's share of the credit for their offense over the last two seasons, which is, happens to coincide with the two new quarterbacks after A.J. McCarron moved on, and it happens to coincide with Lane Kiffin's arrival, and yet they've been really good at or near the top of the heap again, has to do with Lane Kiffin. First of all, he designed an offense around Blake Sims, who was a complete departure from what they'd done with A.J. McCarron. Suddenly they spread it out. By the way, they didn't have a great offensive line in 2014. So for a variety of reasons, including quarterback strengths and weaknesses, they spread it out and allowed him to sort of be mobile and make plays with his feet, and then have sort of short, easier passes. And he found a way to get the ball to Amari Cooper, who was the wide receiver and the undisputed best player on that team. And then last year, you know, he changes things up completely again and kind of go a little bit more into that traditional Alabama into the phone booth, you know, type of conventional offense. And they gave the ball to Derrick Henry over and over and over again, and then found passes for Jake Coker that were comfortable. And so I think he deserves a ton of credit. And frankly, Nick Saban deserves a ton of credit for letting Lane Kiffin, who is just barely restrainable, let's be honest.
Yep.
I mean, and they don't get along greatly. And I think Nick is always tugging Lane Kiffin and pulling him back in play calling and recruiting, because you've seen him on Twitter and stuff like that, and everything else. And I think Lane Kiffin is expanding what Nick would do if left to his own devices, and I think together they've sort of made Alabama better.
Well, it seems to be working as we continue with George Schroeder, USA Today. Another interesting preseason topic, the Heisman. Dan mentioned Clemson quarterback Deshaun Watson as the favorite, and you were like, your phone might be lighting up from Palo Alto.
Right.
But as the quarterback of a team who's starting off second in the rankings, why is he so legit beyond his talent? What kind of cast does he have around him?
Well, he's got good players around him, but I think Nick Saban may have put it best when he said, and this is high praise from a guy who doesn't blow smoke.
Right.
That when he said over the summer that he thinks Deshaun Watson, who knifed them up, I mean, he really sliced and diced Alabama in the championship game, might be the best player in college football since Cam Newton.
Whoa.
When Duck fans know how good Cam Newton was, even though he didn't score a ton of points, we all saw that season. Well, they're different players, but I think Deshaun Watson is the most dynamic player in college football. There's no question about that. And, you know, regardless of what anybody thinks about that comparison or how good he is versus this guy or that guy or the other guy, he's really, really good. And so I think him being a favorite for the Heisman is fine. Now, I think Christian McCaffrey probably should have won it last year. And I think he's got every shot to have the same kind of year this year. And if he does, he'll have a better shot to win it. And by the way, Dan Uthman did have a really nice story. It's up on our website right now. That's well worth your time to read on Christian McCaffrey. It went up either yesterday or the day before, but it's easy to find.
Yeah, I did catch it. It's awesome.
Yeah, well worth your time to read. I'm just touting it for the readers, and it's, you know, that way they'll all go to USAtoday.com. But I think that those two guys have to be considered the kind of the co-favorites, but I would probably agree that Deshaun Watson ought to be the guy. I do think that if you're a Stanford fan, and, you know, there's about three of them, but if you're a Stanford fan, you're not happy with that, given that your guy finished second last year and he should have won it.
All right. We also had right in the middle of your talk with Dan, you said something that kind of stopped me and maybe should concern you, because it's one of the observations I made. Tennessee won 9 games last year, which was the first time in 7 years they won more than 7. They got a great running back, a senior quarterback back. Are they benefiting maybe from being in the SEC? What was your reaction to seeing them at 10?
They're benefited from being in the SEC East, Steve. I mean, do SEC teams get a bump because they're in the SEC? Yeah, I guess so. I guess that's what you're asking. But I think what they're benefiting from is the idea that someone's going to win the SEC East. And they bring back a ton of players. You know, they won 5 of their last 6 games last year. The games they lost were relatively tight affairs, some of which they should have won. You know, they should have beaten Florida if not for goofiness and coaching decisions and things like that. You know, they lost to Oklahoma at home in September in a game they think they should have won. Oklahoma feels like it did win, came back and won. And I guess you could, you know, you can always look at that from two different perspectives. We saw how good Oklahoma was by the end of the year. So, and they bring back all these players. You can make a case that, hey, this program, it's time for them to arrive. Butch Jones has recruited well, and they're ready to go with a senior quarterback in Joshua Dobbs, who's, you know, one of the top two returning quarterbacks in the SEC. That all makes sense. But I think the big reason that they're ranked, you know, in the top 10 in the preseason coaches poll is because, well, first of all, you have to start looking at the you know, it doesn't happen in a vacuum. It's like, all right, who else are you going to put there? But secondly, the SEC East has not been very good. You don't have to be real good to win the SEC East. I mean, this is no slight to Missouri, but they haven't been very good in the last few years, and they keep winning the thing. So, now, obviously, it didn't last year. I think people think that Florida, which did win the SEC East last year, has a chance to be better, as they'll need to be a whole lot better on offense, but is not ready for prime time yet in year 2 under Jim McElwain. And then Georgia has plenty of talent, but nobody's really sure what to expect from Kirby Smart's first year, and they don't have their quarterback situation settled yet, but it looks like it's going to be a true freshman, Jacob Eason, from out there in the Northwest. And while there's plenty of potential apparent in that young man, I'm not sure that's how you want to crank things up. And so I think that's why they're picked to win, Tennessee's picked to win the SEC East. And if you win the SEC East and you miss some of the schools on the West that are really tough in your schedule, then you've got a shot to run up a good record.
No, it's a lot of intrigue, and of course, it's August 10th, and this will play itself out. As always, you can catch his work, usatoday.com. He joins us to open Crunch Time every Wednesday on Twitter. It's at George Schroeder. Always appreciate the time and insight, sir. You have a great rest of your week.
All right. Thanks, Steve. Take care.
Take it easy.